Chapter 2. The bunkhouse was a long, rectangular building. Inside, the walls were whitewashed and the floor unpainted. In three walls, there was a small square window, and in the fourth, a solid door with a wooden latch. Against the walls were eight bunks, five of them made up with blankets, and the other three were showing their burlap, ticking. Over each bunk, there was a nailed an apple box with a forward opening so that it made two shelves for the personal belongings of the occupant of the bunk. And these shelves were loaded with little articles, soap and talcum powder, razors and those little Western magazines ranch men love to read and scoff at and secretly believe. And there was medicines on the shelves and little vials, combs, and from nails on the box sides, a few neckties. Near one wall, there was a black cast-iron stove, its stovepipe going straight up through the ceiling. In the middle of the room stood a big square table littered with playing cards, and around it were grouped boxes for the players to sit on. At about 10 o'clock in the morning, the sun threw a bright, dust-laden bar through one of the side windows, and in and about of the beam flies shot like rushing stars. The wooden latch raised, the door opened, and a tall, stoop-shouldered old man came in. He was dressed in blue jeans, and he carried a big push-broom in his left hand. Behind him came George, and behind George, Lenny. "The boss was expecting you last night," the old man said. "He was sore as hell when you weren't here to go out this morning." He pointed with his right arm, and out of the sleeve came a round, stick-like wrist, but no hands. "You can have them two beds there," he said, indicating two bunks near the stove. George stepped over and threw his blankets down on the burlap sack of straw that was a mattress. He looked into his box shelf and then picked up a small yellow can from it. "Say, what the hell is this?" "I don't know," said the old man. "Says it positively kills lice, roaches, and other scourges. What the hell kind of bed are you giving us, anyways? We don't want no pants rabbits." The old swamper shifted his broom and held it between his elbow and his side while he held out his hand for the can. He studied the label carefully. "Tell you what," he said finally. "Last guy that had this bed was a blacksmith. Hell of a nice fella, and as clean as a guy you want to meet. Used to wash his hands even after he ate." "Then how come he got graybacks?" George was working up a slow anger. Lenny put his bindle down on the neighboring bunk and sat down. He watched George with an open mouth. "Tell you what," said the old swamper. "This here blacksmith, name of Whitey, was the kind of guy that would have put that stuff around even if there wasn't no bugs, just to make sure, see? Tell you what he used to do. At meals, he'd boil his potatoes, and he'd take out every little spot, no matter what kind, before he'd eat it. And if there was a red splotch on an egg, he'd scrape it off. Finally quit about the food. That's the kind of guy he was. Clean. Used to dress up Sundays even when he wasn't going no place, put on a necktie even, and then sat in the bunkhouse." "I ain't so sure," said George skeptically. "What did you say he quit for?" The old man put the yellow can in his pocket, and he rubbed his bristly white whiskers with his knuckles. "Why, he just quit, the way a guy will. Says it was the food. Just wanted to move. Didn't give no other reason but the food. Just says, give me my time one night, the way any guy would." George lifted his tick and looked underneath it. He leaned over and inspected the sacking closely. Immediately, Lenny got up and did the same with his bed. Finally, George seemed satisfied. He unrolled his bindle and put things on a shelf, his razor and a bar of soap, his comb and bottles of pills, his liniment and leather wristband. Then he made up his bed neatly with blankets. The old man said, "I guess the boss will be out here in a minute. He was sure burned when you weren't here this morning. Come right in when we's eatin' breakfast," and said, "Where's the hell them new men?" And he gave the stable buck hell, too. George patted a wrinkle out of his bed and sat down. "Give the stable buck hell?" he asked. "Sure. You see, the stable buck's a nigger." "Nigger, huh?" "Yeah. Nice fellow, too. Got a crooked back where a horse kicked him. The boss gives him hell when he's mad, but the stable buck don't really give a damn about that. He reads a lot. Got books in his room." "What kind of guy is the boss?" George asked. "Well, he's a pretty nice fella. Gets pretty mad sometimes, but he's pretty nice. Tell you what, know what he done Christmas? Bring a gallon of whiskey right in here and says, 'Drink hearty, boys. Christmas comes but once a year.' The hell he did. The whole gallon." "Yes, sir. Jesus, we had fun. They let the nigger come in that night. Little Skinner native Smitty took after the nigger. Done pretty good, too. The guys wouldn't let him use his feet, so the nigger got him. If he could get used to his feet, Smitty says he would have killed the nigger. The guys said on account of the nigger's got a crooked back, Smitty can't use his feet." He paused in relish of the memory. "After that, the guys went into Soledad and raised hell. I didn't go in there. I ain't got the poop no more." Okay, so to clarify there, little guy named Smitty got to beat up the black guy just because he's black. Again, also, of course, we're not going to use the N-word in class. I'm going to read it out loud in the book, but we're not going to use that in class. And it's not okay to use it anywhere. Lenny was just finishing making his bed. The wooden latch raised again, and the door opened. A little stocky man stood in the open doorway. He wore blue jean trousers, a flannel shirt, a black unbuttoned vest, and a black coat. His thumbs were stuck in his belt, on each side of a square steel buckle. On his head was a soiled brown Stetson hat, and he wore high-heeled boots and spurs to prove that he was not a laboring man. The old swamper looked quickly at him and then shuffled to the door, rubbing his whiskers with his knuckles as he went. "Them guys just come," he said, and shuffled past the boss and out the door. The boss stepped into a room with the short, quick steps of a fat-legged man. "I wrote Murray and Reddy. I wanted two men in this morning. You got your work slip?" George reached into his pocket and produced the slips and handed them to the boss. "It wasn't Murray and Reedy's fault. It says right here in the slip that you was to be here for work this morning." George looked down at his feet. "Bus driver gave us a bum steer," he said. "We had to walk 10 miles. Says we was here when we weren't. We couldn't get no rides in the morning." The boss squinted his eyes. "Well, I had to send out the green teams, short two buckers. Wouldn't do any good to go out now till after dinner." He pulled his time book out of his pocket and opened it where a pencil was stuck between the leaves. George scowled meanfully at Lenny, and Lenny nodded to show that he understood. The boss licked his pencil. "What's your name?" "George Milton." "And what's yours?" Lenny said. George said, "His name's Lenny Small." The names were entered in the book. "Let's see. This is the 20th, noon the 20th. He closed the book. "Where you guys been working?" "Up around Weed," said George. "You too?" to Lenny. "Yeah, him too," said George. The boss pointed a playful finger at Lenny. "He ain't much of a talker, is he?" "No, he ain't, but he's as sure as hell of a good worker. Strong as a bull." Lenny smiled to himself. "Strong as a bull," he repeated. George scowled at him, and Lenny dropped his head in shame at having forgotten. The boss said suddenly, "Listen, Small." Lenny raised his head. "What can you do?" In a panic, Lenny looked at George for help. "He can do anything you tell him," said George. "He's a good skinner. He can wrestle grain bags, drive a cultivator. He can do anything. Just give him a try." The boss turned on George. "George, then why don't you let him answer? What are you trying to put over?" George broke in loudly. "Oh, I ain't saying he's bright. He ain't. But I say he's a goddamn good worker. He can put up 400-pound bail." The boss deliberately put the little book in his pocket. He hooked his thumbs in his belt and squinted one eye nearly closed. "Say, what are you selling?" "Huh?" "I said, what stake you got in this guy? You taking his pay away from him?" "No, of course I ain't. What do you think, I'm selling him out?" "Well, I ain't never seen one guy take so much trouble for another guy. I'd just like to know what your interest is." George said, "He's my cousin. I told his own lady I'd take care of him. He got kicked in the head by a horse when he was a kid. He's all right, just ain't bright. But he can do anything you tell him." The boss turned half away. "Well, God knows he don't need no brains to buck barley bags. But don't you try to put nothing over, Milton. I got my eye on you. Why'd you quit in Weed?" "Job was done," said George promptly. "What kind of job?" We was digging a cesspool." "All right, but don't try to put nothing over, because you can't get away with nothing. I seen wise guys before. Going out with the grain teams after dinner. They're picking up barley at the threshing machine. Go out with Slim's team." "Slim?" "Yeah, big tall skinner. You'll see him at dinner." He turned abruptly and went to the door, but before he went out, he turned and looked around for a long moment at the two men. When the sound of his footsteps had died away, George turned on Lenny. So you weren't going to say nothing?" "A word. You was going to leave your big flapper shut and let me do the talking. Damn near lost us the job." Lenny stared hopelessly at his hands. "I forgot, George." "Yeah, you forgot. You always forget, and I'm going to talk you out of it." He sat down heavily on the bunk. "Now he's got his eye on us. Now we got to be careful and not make no slips. You keep your big flapper shut after this." He fell morosely silent. "George, what do you want now?" "I wasn't kicked in the head with no horse, was I, George?" "Be a damn good thing if you was," George said viciously. "Save everybody a hell of a lot of trouble." "You said I was your cousin, George." "Well, that was a lie, and I'm damn glad it was. If I was any relative of yours, I'd shoot myself." He stopped suddenly, stepped up to the front open door, and peered out. "Say, what the hell you doing listening?" The old man came slowly into the room. He had his broom in his hand, and at his heels there was a drag-footed sheepdog, gray of muzzle and with a pale, blind eyes. The dog struggled lamely to the side of the room and lay down, grunting softly to himself and licking his grizzled, moth-eaten coat. The swamper watched him until he was settled. "I wasn't listening. I was just standing in the shade a minute, scratching my dog. I just now finished swamping out the wash house." "You was poking your big ears into our business," George said. "I don't like nobody to get nosy." The old man looked uneasily from George to Lenny and then back. "I just come there," he said. "I didn't hear what you guys was saying. I ain't interested in nothing you was saying. A guy on a ranch doesn't never listen, nor does he ask no questions." "Damn right he don't," said George, slightly mollified. "Not if he wants to stay working long." But he was reassured by the swamper's defense. "Come on in and sit down a minute," he said. "That's a hell of an old dog." "Yeah, I've had him ever since he was a pup. God, he was a good sheepdog when he was younger." He stood his broom against the wall and rubbed his white bristled cheek with his knuckles. "How'd you like the boss?" he asked. "Pretty good. Seemed all right." "He's a nice fellow," the swamper agreed. "You gotta take him right." At that moment, a young man came into the bunkhouse. A thin, young man with brown face and with brown eyes and a head of tightly curled hair. He wore a work glove at his left hand, and like the boss, he wore high-heeled gloves. "Seen my old man?" he asked. The swamper said, "He was here just a minute ago, Curly. Went over to the cookhouse, I think." Okay, so Curly is the boss's son. So the guy that we just met that was asking Lenny and George's questions, that's Curly's dad. "I'll try to catch him," said Curly. His eyes passed over the new man, and he stopped. He glanced coldly at George and then at Lenny. His arms gradually bent at the elbow, and his hands closed into fists. He stiffened and went into a slight crouch. His glance was at once calculating and pugnacious. Lenny squirmed under the look and shifted his feet nervously. Curly stepped gingerly closer to him. "You the new guys the old man was waiting for?" "We just come in," said George. "Let the big guy talk." Lenny twisted with embarrassment. George said, "Suppose you don't want to talk." Curly lashed his body around. "By Christ, he's got to talk when he's spoke to. What the hell are you getting into for?" "We travel together," said George coolly. "Oh, so it's that way." George was tense and motionless. "Yeah, it's that way." Lenny was looking helplessly to George for instructions. "And you won't let the big guy talk, is that it?" "He can talk if he wants to tell you something." He nodded slightly to Lenny. "We just come in," said Lenny softly. Curly stared lovely at him. "Well, next time you answer when you're spoke to." He turned toward the door and walked out. His elbows were still bent out a little. George watched him out, and then he turned back to the swamper. "Say, what the hell has he got in his shoulder? Lenny didn't do anything to him." The old man looked cautiously at the door to make sure no one was listening. "That's the boss's son," he said quietly. "Curly's pretty handy. He's done quite a bit in the ring. He's lightweight, and he's handy. So in the ring means he's a boxer, he's a fighter." "Well, let him be handy," said George. "You don't have to take after Lenny. Lenny didn't do nothing to him. What's he got against Lenny?" The swamper considered. "Well, tell you what. Curly's like a lot of little guys. He hates big guys. He's all the time picking up scraps with big guys. Kind of like he's mad at him because he ain't a big guy. You seen guys like that, ain't you? Always scrappy?" "Sure," said George. "I've seen plenty of tough little guys. But this Curly better not make no mistakes about Lenny. Lenny ain't handy, but this Curly punk is going to get hurt if he messes around with Lenny." "Well, Curly's pretty handy," the swamper said skeptically. "Never didn't seem right to me. Suppose Curly jumps a big guy and licks him. Everybody says what a game guy Curly is. And suppose he does the same thing and get licked. Then everybody says the big guy ought to pick on somebody his own size, and maybe they gang up on the big guy. Never did seem right to me. Seems like Curly ain't giving nobody a chance." George was watching the door. He said ominously, "Well, you better watch out for Lenny. Lenny ain't no fighter, but Lenny's strong and quick, and Lenny don't know no rules." He walked to the square table and sat down on one of the boxes. He gathered some of the cards together and shuffled them. The old man sat down on another box. "Don't tell Curly I said none of this. He'd slough me. He just don't give a damn. Won't ever get canned because his old man's the boss." George caught the cards and began turning them over, looking at each one and throwing it down on a pile. He said, "This guy Curly sounds like a son of a bitch to me. I don't like mean little guys." "Seems like he's got worse lately," said the swamper. "He got married a couple of weeks ago. Wife lives over in the boss's house. Seems like Curly is cockier ever since he got married." George grunted. "Maybe he's showing off for his wife." The swamper warmed to his gossip. "You seen that glove on his left hand?" "Yeah, I seen it." "Well, that glove's full of Vaseline." "Vaseline? What the hell for?" "Well, I tell you what. Curly says he's keeping that hand soft for his wife." George studied the cards absorbedly. "That's a dirty thing to tell around," he said. The old man was reassured. He had drawn a derogatory statement from George. He felt safe now, and he spoke more confidently. "Wait till you see Curly's wife." George cut the cards again and put a solitaire lay, slowly and deliberately. "Purdy?" he asked casually. "Yeah, purdy, but..." George studied his cards. "But what?" "Well, she got the eye." "Yeah, married 2 weeks and got the eye. Maybe that's why Curly's pants is full of ants." "I seen her give Slim the eye. Slim's a jerkline skinner. Hell of a nice fella. Slim don't need to wear no high-heeled boots on a green team. I seen her give Slim the eye. Curly never seen it. And I seen her give Carlson the eye." George pretended a lack of interest. "Looks like we were going to have fun." The swamper stood up from his box. "Know what I think?" George did not answer. "Well, I think Curly's married a tart." "He ain't the first," said George. "There's plenty done that." The old man moved toward the door, and his ancient dog lifted his head and peered about, and then he got painfully to his feet to follow. "I got to be setting out the wash basins for the guys. The teams will be in before long. You guys going to buck Barley?"
"Yeah."
"You won't tell Curly I said nothing?"
"Hell no."
"Well, you look her over, mister. You see if she ain't a tart." He stepped out the door into the brilliant sunshine. George laid down his cards thoughtfully, turned his piles of three. He put four clubs on his ace pile. The sun square was on the floor now, and the flies whipped through it like sparks. A sound of jingling harness and the croak of heavily laden axles sounded from outside. From the distance came a clear call, "Stable Buck! Oh, Stable Buck!" And then, "Where the hell is that goddamn nigger?" George stared at his solitaire lay, and then he flounced the cards together and turned around to Lenny. Lenny was down on the bunk watching him. "Look, Lenny, this here ain't no setup. I'm scared. You're going to have trouble with that curly guy. I seen that kind before. He was kind of feeling you out. He figured he's got you scared, and he's going to take a sock at you the first chance he gets." Lenny's eyes were frightened. "I don't want no trouble," he said plaintively. "Don't let him sock me, George." George got up and went over to Lenny's bunk and sat down on it. "I hate that kind of bastard," he said. "I've seen plenty of 'em. Like the old guy says, Curly don't take no chances. He always wins." He thought for a moment. "He tangles with you, Lenny. We're going to get the can. Don't make no mistake about that. He's the boss's son. Look, Lenny, you try to keep away from him, will you? Don't ever speak to him. If he comes in here, you move clear to the other side of the room. Will you do that, Lenny?"
"I don't want no trouble," Lenny mourned. "I never done nothing to him."
"Well, that won't do you no good if Curly wants to plug himself up for a fighter. Just don't have nothing to do with him. Will you remember?"
"Sure, George. I ain't going to say a word."
The sound of the approaching grain teams was louder. Thud of big hooves on hard ground, drag off the braces and the jingle of trace change. Men were calling back and forth from the teams. George, sitting on the bunk beside Lenny, frowned as he thought. Lenny asked timidly, "You ain't mad, George?"
"I ain't mad at you. I'm mad at this here curly bastard. I hope we was going to get a little steak together. Maybe $100.
His tone grew decisive. "You keep away from him, Curly."
"You keep away from Curly, Lenny."
"Sure I will, George. I won't say a word."
"Don't let him pull you in. But if the son of a bitch socks you, let him have it."
"Let him have what, George?"
"Never mind. Never mind. I'll tell you when. I hate that kind of a guy. Look, Lenny, if you was to get in any kind of trouble, you remember what I told you to do."
Lenny raised up on his elbows, his face contorted with thought. Then his eyes moved sadly to George's face. "If I get in any trouble, you ain't going to let me tend the rabbits." "That's not what I meant. You remember when we slept last night, down there by the river?"
"Oh, I remember. Oh, sure I remember. I go there and hide in the brush."
"Hide till I come for you. Don't let nobody see you. Hide in the brush by the river. Say that over.
Hide in the brush by the river. Down in the brush by the river.
If you get in trouble."
"If I get in trouble."
A brake screeched outside. A call came. "Stable Buck! Oh, Stable Buck!" George said. "Say it over to yourself, Lenny, so you won't forget it." Both men glanced up, for the rectangle of sunshine in the doorway was cut off. A girl was standing there looking in. She had full, rouged lips, so red lips, and wide-spaced eyes, heavily made up. Most girls didn't wear makeup at this time, so the fact that she's wearing makeup shows you what kind of person she is a little bit. Her fingernails were red, her hair hung in little rolled clusters like sausages. She wore a cotton house dress and red mules, that's red shoes, on the insteps of which were little bouquets of red ostrich feathers. "I'm looking for Curly," she said. Her voice had a nasal, brittle quality. George looked away from her and then back. "He was in here a minute ago, but he went."
"Oh."
She put her hands behind her back and leaned against the door frame so that her body was thrown forward.
"You're the new fellows that just came in, ain't you?"
"Yeah." Lenny's eyes moved down over her body, and though she did not seem to be looking at Lenny, she brindled a little. She looked at her fingernails. "Sometimes Curly's in here," she explained. George said brusquely, "Really ain't now."
"If he ain't, I guess I better go look someplace else," she said playfully.
Lenny watched her, fascinated. George said, "If I seen him, I'll pass the word you was looking for him." She smiled archly and twitched her body. "Nobody can blame a person for looking," she said. There were footsteps behind her, going by. She turned her head. "Hi, Slim," she said. Slim's voice came through the doorway.
"Hi, good looking. I'm trying to find Curly, Slim."
"Well, you ain't trying very hard. I seen him going in your house." She was suddenly apprehensive. "Bye, boys," she called into the bunkhouse, and she hurried away. George looked around at Lenny. "Jesus, what a tramp," he said. "So that's what Curly picks for a wife."
"She's pretty," said Lenny defensively.
"Yeah, and she's sure hiding it. Curly got his work ahead of him, but she'd clear out for $20. Lenny stood still, stared at the doorway where she had been. "Gosh, she was pretty," he smiled admiringly. George looked quickly down at him, and then he took him by an ear and shook him.
"Listen to me, you crazy bastard," he said fiercely. "Don't you even take a look at that bitch. I don't care what she says and what she does. I seen him poison before, and I never seen no piece of jailbait worse than her. You leave her be."
Lenny tried to disengage his ear.
"I never done nothing, George." No, you never, but she was standing in the doorway showing her legs, and you weren't looking the other way neither.
I never meant no harm, George. Honest, I never.
Well, you keep away from her, because she's a rat trap if I ever seen one. You let Curly take the rap, and let himself in for it.
Club full of Vaseline, George said disgustedly, and I bet he's eating raw eggs and right into the patent medicine houses.
Lenny cried out suddenly, I don't like this place, George. This ain't no good place. I want to get out of here.
We gotta keep it till we can get a stake. We can't help it, Lenny. We'll get out just as soon as we can. I don't like it no better than you do.
He went back to the table and set out a new solitaire hand. No, I don't like it, he said. For 2 bits, I'd shove out of here. If we can just get a few dollars in the poke, we'll shove off and go up the American River and pan gold. We can maybe make a couple of dollars a day there, and we might hit a pocket.
Lenny leaned eagerly toward him. Let's go, George. Let's get out of here. It's mean here.
We gotta stay, George said shortly. Shut up now. The guys will be coming in.
From the washroom nearby came the sound of running water and rattling basins. George studied the cards. Maybe we gotta wash up, he said, but we ain't done nothing to get dirty.
A tall man stood in the doorway. He had a crushed Stetson hat under his arm while he combed his long, black, damp hair straight back. Like the others, he wore blue jeans and a short denim jacket. When he had finished combing his hair, he moved into the room, and he moved with a majesty only achieved by royalty and master craftsmen. He was a jerkline skinner, the prince of the ranch, capable of driving 10, 16, even 20 mules with a single line to the leaders. He was capable of killing a fly on the wheeler's butt with a butt whip without touching the mule. There was a gravity in his manner, and a quiet so profound that all talk stopped when he spoke. His authority was so great that his word was taken on any subject, be it politics or love. This was Slim, the jerkline skinner. His hatchet face was ageless. He might have been 35 or 50. His ear had heard more than was said to him, and his slow speech had overtones not of thought, but of understanding beyond thought. His hands, large and lean, were as delicate in their action as those of a temple dancer. He smoothed out his crushed hat, creased it at the middle, and put it on. He looked kindly at the two in the bunkhouse. It's brighter than a bitch outside, he said gently. Can't hardly see nothing in here. You the new guys?
Just come, said George. Gonna buck barley?
That's what the boss says. Slim sat down in a box across the table from George. He studied the solitaire hand that was upside down to him. Hope you get on my team, he said. His voice was very gentle. I got a pair of punks on my team that don't know a barley bag from a blue ball. You guys ever bucked any barley?
Hell yes, said George. I ain't nothing to scream about, but that big bastard there can put up more grain alone than most pears can.
Lenny, who had been following the conversation back and forth with his eyes, smiled contemplatively at his companion, at the compliment. Slim looked approvingly at George for having given the compliment. He leaned over the table and snapped the corner of a loose card. You guys travel around together? His tone was friendly. It invited confidence without demanding it.
Sure, said George. We kind of looked after each other.
He indicated Lenny with his thumb. He ain't bright. Hell of a good worker, though. Nice of a fellow. Hell of a nice fellow, but he ain't bright. I knew him for a long time.
Slim looked through George and beyond him. Ain't many guys travel around together, he mused. I don't know why. Maybe everybody in the whole damn world is scared of each other.
It's a lot nicer to go around with a guy you know, said George.
A powerful, big-stomached man came into the bunkhouse. His head still dripped water from the scrubbing and dousing.
Hi, Slim, he said, and then he stopped and stared at George and Lenny.
These guys just come, said Slim by way of introduction.
Glad to meet you, the big man said. My name's Carlson.
I'm George Milton. This here's Lenny Small.
Glad to meet you, Carl said again.
He ain't very small. He chuckled softly at his joke.
Ain't small at all, he repeated. Meant to ask you, Slim. How's your bitch? I seen she wasn't under your wagon this morning.
Bitch there actually means female dog.
She slang her pups last night, said Slim. 9 of 'em. I drowned 4 of 'em right off. She couldn't feed that many.
Got 5 left, huh?
Yeah, 5. I kept the biggest.
What kind of dogs do you think they're going to be?
I don't know, said Slim. Some kind of shepherds, I guess. That's the kind I seen around here most when she was in heat.
Carlson went on. Got 5 pups, huh? Gonna keep all of 'em.
I don't know. Have to keep 'em a while so they can drink Lulu's milk.
Carlson said thoughtfully. Well, looky here, Slim. I've been thinking. That dog of Candy's is so damn goddamn old she can't hardly walk. Stinks like hell, too. Every time he comes into the bunkhouse, I can smell him for 2-3 days. Why don't you get Candy to shoot his old dog and give him one of the pups to raise up? I can smell that dog a mile away. Got no teeth, damn near blind, can't eat. Candy feeds him milk. He can't chew nothing else.
George had been staring intently at Slim. Suddenly a triangle began to ring outside, slowly at first and then faster and faster until the beat of it disappeared into one ringing sound. It stopped as suddenly as it had started.
There she goes, said Carlson.
Outside there was a burst of voices as a group of men went by. Slim stood up slowly and with dignity. You guys better come on while there's still something to eat. Won't be nothing left in a few minutes. Carlson stepped back to let Slim precede him, and then the two of them went out the door. Lenny was watching George excitedly. George rummaged his cards into a messy pile. Yeah, George said. I heard him, Lenny. I'll ask him.
A brown and white one, Lenny cried excitedly.
Come on, let's get dinner. I don't know whether he got a brown and white one. Lenny didn't move from his bunk.
You ask him right away, George, so he won't kill no more of them.
Sure. Come on now. Get up your feet.
Lenny rolled off his bunk and stood up, and the two of them started for the door. Just as they reached it, Curly bounced in.
You seen a girl around here? He demanded angrily.
George said coldly. About half an hour ago, maybe.
What was she doing?
George stood still, watching the angry little man. He said insultingly, She said she was looking for you. Curly seemed really to see George for the first time. His eyes flashed over George, took in his height, measured his reach, looked at his trim middle.
Well, which way she go? He demanded at last.
I don't know, said George. I didn't watch her go.
Curly scowled at him and, turning, hurried to the door.
George said, You know, Lenny, I'm scared I'm going to tangle with that bastard myself. I hate his guts.
Jesus Christ, come on. There won't be a damn thing left to eat.
They went out to the door. The sunshine lay in a thin line under the window. From a distance, there could be heard a rattle of dishes. After a moment, the ancient dog walked lamely in through the open door. He gazed about with a mild, half-blind eyes. He sniffed and then lay down and put his head between his paws. Curly popped into the doorway again and stood looking around the room. The dog raised his head, but when Curly went out, the grizzled head sank to the floor again.